Welcome to Perspectives from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. We, of course, use the Zoom technology to keep us all connected together. And this program was pre-recorded on Tuesday, September 21st for playback on air Thursday, September 23rd. Coming up, there is a phenomenal exhibit that is going to be featured at the Lemoyne Center for the Visual Arts. And this is going to deal with some absolutely astounding and remarkable women in our community whose images you will be faced with literally when you go to the exhibit that kicks off on the 23rd of this month. It is called Women Among Us, Portraits of Strength. And that pretty much encapsulates the rationale behind the entire exhibit, but we're going to delve into it in much greater detail in the course of this hour as we meet many of the people who are involved in that exhibit, including one of the faces that you will see in that portrayal. Let's meet our panel right now. And again, we want to thank Mary Jane Riles, who is very much involved with the exhibit, but she also helped to organize this panel and get us going on that. So MJ, let me just say hi to you first and again extend a sincere appreciation for all the work that you did in preparation of this.
Oh, thanks, Tom. It was my pleasure, my great pleasure, and all of these women here contributed something to it. It's very much a connection thing.
Well, let's find out about these individual contributions if we can. Let's go to Eleanor Dietrich, who's kind of the mastermind of the exhibit, a group leader, and also a deep and abiding connection to wildflowers. Eleanor, welcome. And tell us about that great love of blossoms and other things connected to that.
That's how we started the project. Well, there were two things that happened. My good friend Linda Hall, who's part of this project, and I were talking, and I had just recently had a birthday and thinking about being older and trying to put it in a positive perspective. And then I was walking around Cascades Park, and there was the Riley House. So I stopped, and there was Altamese Farms. And I thought, there are so many older women in our community that have done so much, and it would be a wonderful thing to have a project that shows that. And then it really has just grown by itself. It's been pretty organic, like Linda Hall knew Becky when she went and see her over at Railroad Square, and she became our photographer, and then she knew other people, and it's just grown. And we ended up with 17 women in the project, and Cherry, you might want to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, good handoff, Cherry. And Cherry Alexander, by the way, you moved to Monticello as a mere sprout, right?
Yes, well, actually, I was actually born in Florida, but my parents moved back and forth. And so we got a flavor of the North compared to the South. Let's just say that. Made a big difference. My grandparents were Northerners, and eventually they came South. My parents would go back and forth. But I grew up, most of my formative years were in Monticello and Live Oak, which are two small towns, of course. So having that flavor of a little of the North and a little of the South, I saw the differences, the discrepancies in the way life was for African-Americans. And back then we call them colored. My mom told me one day it was so difficult to get from colored from one thing to another, but colored we were at that time. So being the kind of a person that I was, loved to learn, and my parents were eager for us to learn. Of course, I wanted to go to the library, could not go because of the color of my skin. I could not do other things because of the color of my skin, which made me drive harder to be successful because I wanted a little bit of what everyone else had. So I will stop with that at this point.
Okay, but there is a stunning irony in this story as we move on. And we want to revisit that in just a moment, if that's okay, Cherry, on that.
Yeah.
Let's meet some other folks here on the panel. Becky Root, you are kind of the lead photographer of this. And that was the whole idea, to capture images of these transformative and remarkable seasoned women in our community, right?
Yes, absolutely. We met in Railroad Square, Linda Hall and Eleanor. And like she said, it was a very organic process. They said, you know, we don't see women 65 and older visually. And I turned to them and I said, yeah, I'm on board with, you know, making this project happen and doing what we can to push that forward.
Well, beyond that, though, the images, let's circle back here, and Powell, we're not leaving you out. We'll get to you in a second. But Mary Jane Riles, it's not just the images. There is also a verbal element to this. And talk about that, if you would.
Oh, well, Becky made that happen. Becky said she was talking to Linda and me one day, and she just sort of out of the blue said, well, Mary Jane, are you going to write poems about this? And I just thought, I don't know. And I was, Linda had asked me to please, when we were in Italy together teaching, she had asked me if I wanted to be a part of the project. And I just thought, oh, Eureka, it's about time this happened. And I really wanted to do that. And I was going to write up their stories. So, you know, I didn't really answer Becky, I don't think, very well that day. But then we brought it up again. And I said, well, maybe really tiny short poems. And I joked around and said, how about haiku? And she and Linda just lit up and were like, haiku, yeah, let's, you know. So that was a relief to me to be able to do that. At the same time, it's only 17 syllables to talk about a woman.
And I think it was right away, I think on our first shoot with Charlotte Williams, that Eleanor just said, we've got to have stories. This is not just a visual experience. And I think that very next photo session is when we were like, Mary Jane, let's do this. Let's make sure we have it all. We have biographies, we have the poems, and we have these amazing images as well.
All right. Before we dig any further, though, we now have a concept. We're starting to work on the execution. And Powell Kreese, suddenly, what? They pull you into this and say, let's have a big exhibit at LeMoyne? Or how did this happen?
Well, that's not too far from the truth. I've known Mary Jane and Linda Hall as well for a long time. And they told me about this idea they were working on. They know that that's right up my alley. And I just thought it was a wonderful project, but the year had already kind of been set for all of our exhibits. And so I was desperately trying to think of how we could incorporate this great project. And luckily we found a way, but I just think it's part of the DNA of what LeMoyne is all about. We were founded by women and we're a staff of predominantly women, and we're all about bringing the community together through art. And so this just seemed like a natural fit that I didn't want to miss up the opportunity to showcase.
Yeah, and especially with local women who are connected to the community so intimately, that just seems to be part and parcel, as you said, of what LeMoyne was originally envisioned as a community arts and cultural center, a focus for the entire area. And so that just makes perfect sense. But let's find out from you, Eleanor, how was the selection of these women made? Was it, you throw a whole bunch of names into a hat or a shoebox, or how did you go about deciding, okay, who makes the cut on this?
It was people who knew other people that would be good. And we didn't really have to go recruit anybody or figure out ahead of time. And like, Jerry, you probably bought someone and somebody probably told us about you. And yes. Alpha Reese came, and you, Mary Jane.
Yes, I said, Jerry, you got to do Jerry.
Good.
Yes.
Good. And that, it, you know, we didn't have a plan, and it just happened. It was not a hard thing at all, and we got the most amazing people to be there. And Becky worked really hard to set the photography session up so they'd be comfortable and make it pleasant and make them feel at ease. And you took about at least a dozen pictures of each person, didn't you, Becky?
Oh, I took at least 100, probably to 200.
Oh my goodness.
Each person. Yeah.
And then she's going to put on a jump drive what, about 12 of those and give it to each individual. But she also wanted to have these large images on aluminum. So it's going to be very striking. It's going to be, I can't wait till the opening to see the people in the pictures, with the pictures. Yeah. It's going to be really nice.
And that opening coming up on September 23rd. And Powell, how long?
October 14th.
Oh, right. Which now? I'm sorry.
It's October 14th.
October 14th. I'm sorry. Here, I'm misinformed on that. But how long does it go on then?
So it will go, it'll be up until October 30th. And we'll also be having a little muffins and mimosas brunch hour to celebrate as well on the 23rd from 11 to noon.
Okay. Sounds yummy on that. And how many images and accompanying haikus are in the entire collection?
That'll be 17.
Mm-hmm. 18? Okay. All right. Cherry Alexander, back to you again. What was that like? We heard the mechanics that that Becky Ruta went through as far as putting together a good portfolio of images for each of the participating women. But what was that like to sit in front of her camera?
Oh, wow. It was awesome. And the reason why I'm saying this, I have received so many awards, accolades over the years. I have been really blessed. But this experience was different because I was sitting there telling my life story and they were listening. And just the environment, the atmosphere was just friendly, warm, and welcoming. It was not a structured environment where I've gone before and I sat and it was like, you know, blah, 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 one, two, three. This was personal. I felt the love, mm-hmm. I felt the warmth from each of those individuals, which allowed me to open up and to tell my story. I have a very sordid story and I can't tell it all today. I tell you that. growing up, you know, in the 50s and 60s and during the time of segregation and then integration, there were a lot of things happening, but that environment just allowed me to feel as though I was with family and that I could just talk and tell my story. And you never know when you tell your story, if it's going to touch someone in some way, because most mm-hmm. times people actually don't know what you have gone through because they have been brought up in a totally different environment. And they think that's why we have so many problems we have today, because people don't really understand history and what has happened. Oh, you've had the same opportunities I have. No, I have not had the same opportunities you have. My father had sixth grade education, my mother a ninth grade. Not because they were not intelligent, but because the opportunity was not there for them. In the olden day, when an older child would get out and work and help raise the other children, and thus what happened to my parents. Even though they could teach me anything I needed to know, help my homework and everything else. So my point is, we did not have the same opportunity. I could not walk through that door of the public library and get those books and to read. Once I was able to do that, then I began to travel through books because I was not allowed. I couldn't afford to travel. Let's say that. My mom had 11 children. I could not afford to travel. So I traveled through books. So I'm just trying to give you a feel of what life is like during those times in families that were just ordinary families. And that's what I was, an ordinary family, full of love, but not other things, not a lot of money, but love, and we had all we needed to eat and dress. But my point is, things are not the same for everyone. And that mm-hmm. I had to work harder to get where I am. So in order to come from that childhood of learning, having to go to the separate restrooms, couldn't even go in the front of the restaurant that my neighbor worked in. I had to go to the back door and get my sandwich. And that's the environment that I grew up in. And so when my parents kept telling us there was another world, and when I was able to get those books, because the only thing we had in the house basically was the Bible back in the day. When we started being able to get those other books and I started seeing things, when I went to school, the textbooks were the ones from the white school where the pages were torn and written on. So it was a very different world. But boy, when I got into that library, that opened up the world to me, totally opened up the world to me. I traveled through those books. I learned that there was another world. And then I began to strive for that world. And striving for that world has gotten this seasoned lady where she is today. I ended up very quickly, because I don't know how much time we have, but ended up going to college. My parents couldn't afford to send me to Florida State, which I could have gotten into, or FAMU, where all my friends went. I got accepted at both schools, but ended up going to TCC because my mom paid my first semester tuition. From then on, I got my own financial aid, my own grants, my own whatever I need, and scholarships, and paid my way through school while I worked 2 to 3 jobs. I know that we can do it if you work hard. Working through that, getting my associate, bachelor's, and master's degree, and then got accepted into the doctoral program. So I know that whatever you want to do, you can do it. It just takes hard work and persistence. So when I did work in the TCC library as a student assistant, I came back later to be the director of that library, something that I never envisioned. The first African-American director, still the first African-American director. They have not gotten another director that's of my color and race. Mm. And Tom, really quickly, after that, I realized that I needed to make a difference, not just in that library, but I wanted to help others. So that's why I started the African-American History Calendar, which was named in my honor in 2009. And then I worked as a Black Student Union advisor. I did so much other than the library because I wanted to make a positive difference and give some of these other young people an opportunity that they may not see without the help. So that's why I worked hard, not just in that capacity, but other places in the community, because I knew that I did not make it by myself. All along, God placed people in my life to help me in situations where I needed some help. And I wanted to be there for those students as well, Tom. So basically, that's in a small summary. There's so much more. That's my life story. But boy, if you only knew where the obstacles I had to overcome, that was only a few, to get to where I am today. And I'm so proud that I was able, and I'm grateful to God for that blessing.
Again, Cherry, that is such a delicious irony, though, from the days when you as a little girl could not go into the library down in Jefferson County to actually being the director of the library at TCC. That is, to me, is remarkable. But Mary Jane Riles, how do you take that incredible story and turn that into 17 syllables? How does that happen?
I think I just looked for the essence and I don't know. I just, sometimes they would give me the words and sometimes I would just come up with a brief description of them and then winnow it down. I would start a little bit bigger and I'd winnow it down. And with people like Cherry, women who are so strong and they've done so many things and they're such nice people anyway. It moved me and it made me work really hard on the haikus because I felt like it was really important to express things about them because they were similar and they were different. All of them, these women always have had something that's important to them. They always want to connect, whether they were naturalists or scientists or mythology teachers or dance teachers or bookmakers or librarians or nurses and so on and so on. They just worked very hard and often without the support of others. They expected little in the way of accolades, but they've dedicated themselves to what they love doing. And nobody was a diva. And they were honest and compassionate and loving. The good fight was in all of them, and they were so open about it too. And it was easy to get to their essences because they weren't afraid anymore. They're not afraid of things. So that's how the words came.
Well, you were able to do that verbally. Becky Ruta, how do you do that visually? Because anyone nowadays in the digital realm can take really, really nice pictures. And I know bunches of very competent and talented photographers in this area. But to drill down below the superficialities and to find the essence of that individual in an image, that takes extreme art. How did you do that with each of your subjects in this project?
Sure. So I think Cherry talked about it first and foremost when she walked into that room. where I was photographing from the day, from the minute she walked in there, she felt comfortable. She felt the warm space. And that all started with having a beautiful team of women that I was working with. Start that from the minute they called, you know, whoever was coming. When they walked into the room, they took their outfits. We had food, we had water, we had Mary Jane welcoming, hugging. We had them talking about themselves, right? We were listening. I think we were really listening to each other. And after they shared their stories, they would come into my space, which was low light. I have music on, soft music on, and it wasn't about telling them what they needed to do or be. I think it was a continued dialogue with them, just asking questions, following up, and sometimes not talking at all, just letting them relax and shooting through that, right? So as I'm maybe asking a question, or they're going to grab something, or they're letting their guard down to laugh for a second, that's when I take those pictures and I just keep going with that. And as long as it feels almost natural, or, you know, you put up a camera, nobody's natural. Let's put it that way, right? We all have those faces that we put on and positions we take. And I think as you start making people feel comfortable through questioning, through listening, through sometimes people say, I don't want to smile at all, right? Okay, well, you don't have to smile. Like, let's not do that then. So that was a big part of it.
May I say something about that?
Please do, Eleanor. Go ahead.
It's an example of how the whole project grew on its own, because we learned as we took different steps what to do and what to have. And our feeling was, just a portrait's not enough. We want the people who are looking at the portrait to have a sense of who that person is. So we started out with the haikus, and then we actually went into interviews with everyone. Didn't we know Jane, and did a description of the person, so you'd have a better idea of the person that you were looking at. And then all of that kind of, we have a woman on our team, Carolyn Knight, who turned out to be a wonderful contributor in terms of graphics and everything. So she is putting together a book that will have each person in there, in their photograph and their stories, and they'll be available for sale. And it's just going to be so interesting, and you'll know so much more about these very interesting and different people.
Pal Kreese, this is so different for Lemoyne, though. All of the different types of exhibits and displays and festival-type happenings that you've had over the years, I can't recall anything that is similar to what we're talking about today.
Well, I would say that there are always meaningful exhibits that fluctuate in and out. This one, to me, just feels very, very local and focused, which I love, because part of what I like to do in an exhibit is give every artist in the community a chance to showcase their work and still have a cohesive message. But what's really nice about this is it's very specific, and it celebrates all of these incredible women that honestly don't get the attention and appreciation that they deserve. And I was raised by and surrounded by a lot of very, very strong, capable women. And so it's just such a treat to get to showcase them.
Well, and particularly since, and Jerry, you can probably back me up on this. We are such a small community that everybody knows everybody. And to walk into an exhibit space, which automatically gives it a little bit more gravitas than running into someone at CVS on a Sunday morning, and you think, oh my gosh, I didn't know that about this person or that person or this bit of their history. It is a, I don't want to say it's a transformative type of thing, but, you know, you've just been Cherry Alexander all of these years, and suddenly, you know, you have, I don't want to say moved up a little bit, but maybe you have in some way.
Yeah, Tom, I am a unique individual. Everywhere I go around town, people do know who I am. And then, like you said, I'm not a kind of a person that brags about what things have been done, because I give all the accolades to God. I'm just a believer that I cannot accomplish anything without God. Now, people know me from the calendar, of course, because my face is on that calendar. But there are other, many other things in life. Nobody knew what I had to go through to get where I am. So yes, from what you're saying, you know, they probably thought it was like a silver platter, like in a lot of families where you know somebody and they help you get where you need to be. But that was not mm-hmm. the case. And as it is for many minorities, where you have to earn every inch that you climb, every inch you earn it. And I've always been said, been told and believed that I had to be twice as good to compete in anything than any because of the color of my skin. And now my great grandfather was white man, Tom. I'm just gonna be honest with you, okay? We all have a little blood in us. There's nothing that there's no history that you're gonna find. If you go farther enough back, you're gonna find a little something, a little mix of something. So my point is this, my opportunities may not have been there because of the color of my skin, but that should not stop anyone. And I, what makes this so special is that seasoned individuals are being honored. Oftentimes when we get to a certain age now, all of my years, boy, I receive 4 and 5 awards every month. And I'm just being honest, just coming back and forth. I received one last year. But after a certain period of time, seasoned people are often forgotten. Their contributions are often forgotten. You know, there's a new wave of people who don't know about those individuals. And they are forgotten in history, all of the accomplishments. But this makes me know that I'm still appreciated. And also, it will give history to those who are coming up to know that they didn't make it by themselves. Someone paved the way for them. That's why they are able to do the things that they can do today, because we stood fast and accomplished these things. So my point to this is that this is different, no doubt about it. This particular honor is different because we're seasoned, somehow sometimes forgotten, but now putting this in writing, showing this life-size portrait, all of these things will let people know that these people are here, and I better find out a little more about these people because, hey, that helped me get where I am today. And that's how I see this as being totally different, whereas the others, I go in and I pick up, get an award, and I come home, I'm grateful. It dies, but there's history because there's going to be a story told, and there's going to be this portrait. So Tom, yes, it is very different.
Yeah, that old saying, you're right, Cherry. You know, we all stand on the shoulders of giants. And as we're looking straight out into the future, we can miss what's right below our feet right there and how much we owe the people who came before us. Or in this case, and Eleanor Dietrich, I think this was part of your thing, too, that I don't want to say that 65 or even 85 is the new 55, but still there are people today, you know, of what we used to think of as advanced years when I was growing up. And these folks are still moving and shaking and doing all the things that normally you would have thought would have been reserved for people in their 30s and 40s. And they're still making a contribution.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, and
I think.
Go ahead, Mary Jane.
Well, one of the things I discovered yesterday, Cherry said everything that I should have thought to say. It was just great. And I love that we're honoring women who are of a certain age. And now we all know what that means because of Cherry's deep explanation. And I was thinking yesterday that what's great about what we have done, it didn't dawn on me until I realized we have a jazz band of people who are young. We think of them as kids. Jack and his jazz band, and Powell, who's young up and coming Tallahassee administrator, and the person who works with her, Ariel. We're connecting, and it's making a huge difference. I just love what we're doing.
Okay, pal, that was a good name check here. Intergenerational understanding, though, and cooperation and collaboration. This sounds like a undercurrent of this whole thing as well, instead of, oh, these folks, their time is over, they're long past. But this is really bringing a lot of the past into the future, right?
Oh, absolutely. I don't believe in separating in any way, shape, or form. We all can learn from each other, no matter how old. I'm learning things from my nieces who are younger than I am, and I'm learning from a lot of my seniors and my peers. I mean, their age really shouldn't have anything to do with it, but it has for a long time. So I'm glad we're working to change that a little bit.
Yeah, from the generation here that wasn't going to trust anyone under 30 until we hit 35, and suddenly, what happened? Becky Ruta, I'm still fascinated with the kind of nuts and bolts of your process when you were taking photographs of these folks. You even encouraged them to bring props, right?
Yes, correct. So I was looking loosely at Irving Penn's book called Small Trades, where he had individuals bringing in, well, they didn't bring things, and they literally dressed like whatever their employment was. There weren't a lot of women in, of course, then in the photos, but I was interested in, you know, careers, these women's careers, I think, often defined a lot of what they were bringing, but it didn't have to relate to that. I was just interested in what it is, if you were going to bring an object at this point, that helped describe your life or what you were passionate about, what would they bring? And that turned out to be a real catalyst for a lot of the photos, and also in, I think, opening the women up in the photo shoot. So Cherry, I remember your calendars very specifically, right? Some people brought awards or their paintings or what else did we have? I mean, just, it was an old iron. Yeah, Alchemy's iron. It really, I think, added a little something to those images that, and I didn't use them all, you know, for the props, but I think it did help in understanding more about these women and what they were proud of, most proud of.
Well, Cherry, what was the significance of the calendar that you chose to bring in to be part of your portrait?
I lived in Jacksonville and worked at the community college there. Now it's not a community college, it's a college now, but Florida Community College. At that time, Black history was a big thing in that area. You had a high percentage of minority students. And I, of course, always worked aggressively everywhere I went. I'm just the person that believes in making a difference. So I participated and also chaired the committee a couple of years, and we did a calendar there. And so when I came to TCC, it was in the month of February, I'll never forget it. They did not have any African-American history activities going on. So I went to administration, being the person that I am, the leadership, and asked, why aren't there any activities for our students to educate so we'll understand each other and be able to work and grow closely together? And that's important. The more we understand about each other, the more we can relate and work together. And so they said, oh, we let the ball drop, blah, blah, blah. And so that's how Cherry was born, with all of the calendar. But the first years, I started out with having African-American history activities, weekly activities for that entire month. And those things grew, which included high schools coming in, bringing their students in, introducing them. And think about it, it's not introducing them just to Black history, it's introducing them to TCC. That's planting seeds. Also, we had activities for the public where we honored different people and brought in. So that means the public was going to see what TCC offered and that TCC cared, because that would recruit their children and grandchildren to TCC. So in other words, it was not just the paper. It was just TCC being a community college, as the name stands, that it would bring, let the community know what things they offer, that we care about all people, not one or two races, but all people, all generations. And that helped recruit minority students to Tallahassee Community College. But it just grew, the minority enrollment just continued to grow. And I was known within the African-American community and still is today as Ms. TCC. I'm still solving problems daily for students. Their parents will call me and I will put them in the connection with the right person at TCC to get problems solved. So in essence, Tom, these things all come together. You know, sometimes we make a step. We don't see that the next step is going to bring something closer together. And before you know it, you have something together that's uniform that can make a difference in life. And that's pretty much what I did. I was doing things that I saw would make a difference because I knew what I had gone through. And when I saw those things, they started to come together and I saw how I was making a difference in others' lives. And see, not just the lives of the campus environment, but just the students. I'll give you one example. I noticed one day, I told you I was the Black Student Union advisor for many years. I noticed that a student was not walking the way she normally walks. And I stopped and it was after hours when she was coming out of the student union. I said, hey, you okay? She said, I broke my glasses and I'm having problems seeing. She was walking off balance. I actually said, I'm off work. Can I take you out to get your I don't have any money. I paid for them, got her back. Because you can't study if you can't see. So we have to look at all of these things. And I was just a well-rounded figure that just saw whatever the need was. If I needed to be a mother right then to talk to someone, a mentor, if I needed to be able to show them academically, whatever it was, I think this whole project that we have here today brings us together. And it's an awesome project. So I just have accolades for these ladies who had this vision because it's a wonderful thing that has happened.
Well, Eleanor Dietrich, it kind of was your vision from what I understand here. Has this fulfilled your dream?
It succeeded. It was just more an idea that sounded good. And then we got the people together that made it happen. And I think we all participated in it in a really good way, both the team. I have to say the team, there were about five of us on the team and we never disagreed on anything. And we always had new ideas and it was a wonderful group to work with. And then the women that we had in the project were amazing. So it's going to be like a story in a way when all of the photographs are out and the people are there. It's going to be a lot more than just a photo.
Well, acknowledging the amount of effort and time and sweat and tears that this has consumed in being assembled, is there any possibility of a revisitation? We have dozens, if not hundreds, perhaps thousands of incredible women in this community also deserving of recognition and celebration. Is this something that may just take off like the proverbial bird and fly?
It certainly could, couldn't it? Yes. Because we're going to have a lot of people there and they're going to see what was done and it was possible. It wasn't something that was too difficult to do.
Yes. And there is a rumor going around that someone who was kind of on the periphery of this says, I'm going to start planning the next one.
That's right.
Can I say something, Tom? When I started out with the calendar, I had no idea it would be 20 some years. There are so many great people out there that deserve the recognition. And I used to tell my son, you know, my son is represented to Ramon Alexander. And I used to tell him all the time that opportunities are there, grab them. And I saw that as an opportunity to grab and keep doing this every year because there were so many good people. So I don't think you guys can stop with number one, okay? Pressing because there's so many seasoned women out there that deserve this.
And Pal Chris, that would certainly take care of at least part of your annual calendar there at Lemoyne. You'd know that, you know, that specific time frame is going to be devoted to these outstanding women, right?
Oh, the seed has been planted.
Yeah. It needs to be done. If not annual, at least biennial, you know, twice.
Yeah. It was a joyful experience, too.
Yeah.
All the parts of it were, everybody worked together so well. the outcome was so special.
Yeah. And what was really unusual is that four people who are artists and one who's a naturalist artist managed to raise $11,000.
That's right.
I mean, we're not that way. We're not, but we loved and we're so committed to this thing that we just opened our mouths and said, will you give us some money, please? This is so worthy.
Mary Jane, that's because of who you all are. I'm telling you, you all are such warm, warm individuals. I can't express that enough. It's such a joy meeting you guys. I knew most of you anyway, but just to actually with you, believe me, you all made a difference because of the environment that you created. And if you keep that going, things will keep moving forward in the direction that you want it to be. So it's because of your personalities, you as individuals, that's what set the tone for this. Thank you so much for making it such a warm fireplace environment. That's
exactly. Sherry, I'm going to remember that phrase, warm fireplace environment. That has a very, very nice ring to it. So it looks like, Becky Rudy, you're going to be probably burning up some additional megapixels here as we move forward with this. But what was the selection process like, though? Once you had all of these shots, we talked about that, and prop or no, lighthearted or serious or whatever. What to you encapsulated, okay, here's my top five or top 10 for each of the participants in that. How did you go through that winnowing process?
Well, I used my team, my fabulous team of women. Initially, I had about 100 or 200 photos of each woman. And, I used my own editing skills to just kind of cull it down to 25 or 30. And then we started off sitting in front of a television and hooking up the laptop to the TV and sitting down as a group and, basically ranking, the top five. And then as Mary Jane got her haikus rolling, she would send those out. And then I very much took into dialogue with the writing and that poem, what image I was going to select for the final one.
Okay. And did the subject matter have any say on the final outcome, or was it just a big surprise?
Nope. They put their faith in all of us to make that final selection. And of course they are getting a USB with their top 25 images. So they trusted in me, and I appreciate each and every one of them for allowing that trust to come through in the final exhibition.
I didn't have an opportunity to ask Eleanor Dietrich about the flowers, though. We mentioned that at the outset. You have an interesting background when it comes to floral things. Can you talk about that, Eleanor?
Well, it comes from a variety of things. I think there's an author called Doug Tallamy who wrote a book called Bringing Nature Home. And he said that native insects must have native plants to eat because that's what they've gone through before. And so I started redoing my garden with more native plants. And then I went out into Apalachicola National Forest, which is an amazing place. And I have thousands of photos of wildflowers now. And so what I've been doing now is I can organize them and create an album. So like at the beginning of each month, I'll put that album up on Facebook so other people will get an idea of what's there, because I want people to appreciate them but also participate with it. And then I worked with the Florida Wildflower Foundation for a while, and I was the liaison with the Florida Department of Transportation. And they were mowing 15 feet on the side of all the roads, and that's where the wildflowers could grow. So, well, actually, they were mowing the whole right of way, but we came to an agreement that they would mow 15 feet in the blooming season because that was the requirement for safety. But anything beyond that, they would not mow until the winter. And everybody participated in that very well. I started with the secretary of the department, and he said, if the districts agree, I support it. And so it cost them less money. And then some of them started putting up signs, wildflower area. And I think the roadsides in District 3, which is from, I think it's Escambia through Leon County, you can see a difference in the roadsides, but somebody has to keep up with it. So we're still doing that. And Liz Barnett has taken over that job. Not Liz Barnett, Liz Sparks has taken over that job. And so we're still communicating with everybody, and we're still making a difference. It's not just beauty, but it's supporting nature too.
I'm thinking of
Eleanor, will you?
Go ahead.
Eleanor, talk about your three P's as well.
Yes.
In trying to work with people, I say you have to start out being pleasant. And then you have to start out being, polite. You start it with being polite, pleasant, and persistent. You don't go away. But you don't make them upset with you either. Because if you put people on the defensive right away, you're not going to get anywhere.
That's true.
Well, that's why I think, Eleanor, you have to run for something so that you can be in the Florida legislature and maybe leverage those three P's into some of the discussions that take place up there. Because, I think they could use it from time to time. So. folks, time is whizzing by, but I want to give everyone an opportunity for any final thoughts that we have. And again, have a plug for the show that is coming up next month. So, Eleanor, we were already in your floral neck of the woods. There any final thoughts that you have on the upcoming Women Among Us Portraits of Strength at Lemoy?
I'm just so excited. In my mind, I keep thinking about the opening where the women will be there and they'll be standing next to their portrait, and it's just gonna bring tears to my eyes, I'm sure, because it's gonna be so special. And it's not just that group of 17 people, but their families will be there. And then there'll probably be another project. And it wasn't that hard to do, would you say, Becky, to do the project?
Well, it was 2 years. I mean, we spent a solid 2 years planning and executing and taking breaks for COVID and coming back together. And so the exhibition will feel like a beautiful culmination of all those things and a celebration of the group of women that participated for us and for all of our donors that supported. So I think it was a lot.
It's a lot, but we did the process. We had more sense about how to do that and how to get people involved and the effect that it's going to have, I think that's going to be really good.
That's right.
I can't wait to go.
I sure hope.
And I'm going to get dressed up. I haven't decided what I'm going to wear, but I think I'm going to get dressed up.
Well, among the notable 17 will be you, Cherry Alexander, and I know you're looking forward to that too.
Oh, yes. Tom, I will say that, the portrait won't have a mask on. He was saying standing up by the portrait. Oh, wow, this mask business. It has really been a journey. And to Eleanor, and you all were talking about the amount of work. I've always known and believed that there's nothing good unless there's some hard work.
That's right.
If it's going to be something good come out of it, it's going to take some work. So you can have that perfectionist. You know, anybody that can throw something together. But for it to be perfectionist project, it's going to be some hard, down, dirty work. Mm-hmm. Simply that. But Tom, thank you. And I am looking forward to standing next to that portrait of life-size portrait of Cherry. And I pray that I'm brave enough to take the mask off for a few minutes because I am sticking to that mask because I'm asthmatic, okay, among other things.
But we're going to have a photographer there, Michelle Mignon. Deshae is going to take pictures of the women next to their portraits and other scenes there.
Yeah, I'll do that.
All right. We'll be looking for Mignon there too, but we'll also be looking for your haikus, Mary Jane Riles, and thank you for being part of that. Any last thoughts from you, ma'am?
Thank you for having us, Tom. This was so fun, and you're so good at what you do. Mm-hmm. And Powell, you too. You're so good at what you do. And I want to read these haikus for the ladies who are here with us today on the radio. Cherry's haiku, which may have changed a bit, but we changed them a lot. But she knows the future is now. She steps over trouble, finds a path with joy.
Awesome.
And then Eleanor's playing. She throws blooms that quietly change the world. Ferns, grasses, flowers.
Oh, that is magnificent. Boy, does that capture the essence of these two remarkable women? My gosh. Powell, going to have to write one for you next, I guess. But
oh, gosh. He'll say tired, and that will be about it.
Well, once again, the exhibit takes place when at LeMoyne, and any other comments that you want to throw in there?
So it'll be October 14th from 5 to 7:30. There is a small entry fee for non-LeMoyne members, but in general, there's going to be live music, a full bar. We'll also have our Art and Soul Celebration silent auction available to look at in one of the smaller galleries. But mostly, it's just going to be this very impactful, powerful display of these women. And I take it with the utmost seriousness and responsibility. And so I'm very excited to curate this exhibit because I know it will be an emotional experience.
It is.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, ladies, thank you for being on and giving us a very wonderful preview of this upcoming event, and can't wait to see it at LeMoyne coming up very soon. And thank you for being part of Perspectives, produced by WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee. Thanks to Taylor Cox, Paul Dam, Amy Diaz de Villegas, Tricia Moynihan, and Lido Rawls, a whole cast of characters, including our executive producer and my boss, Kim Kelling, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Next week, we are going to take our annual trek down the mighty Apalachicola with the River Trek folks and get an update on how that mighty body of water, which encompasses one of the most biologically diverse areas in all of the southeastern United States, is faring in these modern times. We'll check that out. Hope you can join us then for Perspectives right here on WFSU Public Media. Take care.